Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there, not just around town, which is Calgary, Alberta, Canada, but around the world. If you're hearing my name, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. It's Barcelona weekend. It is a major, major upgrade team kind of weekend. There's not many teams out there that don't have brand new upgrades coming for this race. So let's just get right into it right now. We're starting off with Ferrari. They've got a new rear wing. They've got a new floor body. They've got a new floor edge, new diffuser, new halo, new engine cover. All of this is supposed to be for aerodynamic control and more speed, more downforce on this track. Now, Ferrari has come out to say that this is not a track-specific upgrade, that this is actually part of their season-long upgrade package. Hopefully it works out for them. Ferrari, in the tradition of upgrades, has a tendency to go one of two ways. Either they bring out a massive package and it works for the entire season with little tweaks here and there, or they come out with a massive package that is absolutely sweet bugger all for them. Hopefully this is not the latter. Hopefully this is an upgrade that will help them keep up the fight against Ferrari and hold back McLaren in the standings. Moving on, Red Bull. They've got a new side pod inlet. They've got a new engine cover. They've got a new floor body. They've got a new beam wing and rear wing end plate. Now, the main upgrade to this is the engine cover. Everything else that goes along with the Red Bull car is more of a, well, if we upgrade one, we have to upgrade everything else because it's just not going to fit properly. The last couple of upgrades from Red Bull haven't exactly worked out the way they wanted it to. Unlike the 2023 season where it seemed like everything that they touched turned to gold, this year it seems to be, it's not maybe that they're struggling a little bit, but maybe they've come down off of God mode when it comes to upgrading the car and that they're with the rest of those civilians and the rest of the teams. Now, hopefully this will give them a little bit more drag along the straight line. They were as fast as last year, but not as fast as they expected to be this year. Hopefully the extra downforce and the upgrades will help them from here on out as they head into the triple header. Aston Martin's got a new front suspension, a new front corner, and new rear corner. This is just kind of a bandage on an open wound. They keep throwing upgrades at the car that kind of work, but kind of don't at the same time. I think they're trying to do the what I like to call the McLaren way of upgrading. Do a little bit here, research it, do a little bit there, research it, and wait. The only thing with Aston Martin is they can't really afford to wait that long like McLaren did last year when it came to their upgrades, just because they're in the hunt. They're in that mid-season or mid-grid kind of battle, and the longer they wait for upgrades, the further back they fall. But the faster they rush these upgrades out, it's not necessarily helping the car at all. Speaking of an upgraded car that is going absolutely nowhere fast, V-Carb, RB, Cash App, whatever you want to call them again, they've got a new front corner. Again, they've got another engine cover. They've got new side pods. They've got new floor body. They also have a new rear wing and a new beam wing. It's not for the lack of trying. Now, V-Carb is throwing sensible upgrades at their car. They just doesn't seem to be helping, or maybe they're throwing upgrades at the wrong time for the wrong race. Whatever the mathematical equation ends up being for these guys, they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. Daniel Ricciardo got a new chassis that he much rather prefers from the last one that he had. He's performing much better, but now every time they throw an upgrade on the car, it doesn't really seem to help. It kind of keeps them in one spot, almost treading water at best. Yuki Tsunoda seems to be going backwards with the new upgrades to their car. Hopefully this weekend it's going to be a lot better because it's, like I said, it's a triple header. They need to get these upgrades finished sooner, faster, or sorted out sooner rather than later. Kix Alba just got two new upgrades. They've got a new front corner and a new rear wing. Again, downforce. They are taking the approach of working from both ends and meeting in the middle. They seem to be concentrating more on the rear of the car and the front of the car opposed to the center of the car. They seem to be not ignoring, but holding off upgrades for the side pods, the engine cover, and the floor and such. Maybe they know something that nobody else doesn't. Maybe you work the front and back end first, and then it comes together. Joe Guan Yu, Valtteri Bottas, they seem to be getting a little bit more consistent with the upgrades. They're not pulling in the massive points that the team needs, but at the same time, at least a little bit of forward momentum is better than nothing. Haas, new rear impact structure. This is totally safety feature accommodating. This has absolutely nothing to do with aerodynamics. This has absolutely nothing to do with the speed. It doesn't look like that Haas has given up on the season. It just looks like they're making sensible upgrades. It seems to be that they're going more along the lines of, well, our guys don't really seem to be pushing it too hard when they need to, so let's just make the car more stable, let's make it more reliable, and just kind of slowly pick away at it. It's kind of like the Haas way to do it. Big news out of Ferrari. So some of you may watch this, some of you may not. A lot of people just like F1 or they like IndyCar, but I like to look across several different spectrums. The 24-hour of Le Mans had just finished, and Ferrari ended up winning the 24-hour of Le Mans in the supercar class. Now this, for those of you who don't or are not familiar with the 24-hour of Le Mans, it is obviously a race that lasts for 24 hours straight. You've got three drivers per team. So Ferrari, for instance, has two cars, two teams, six guys. Now, Ferrari ended up winning the 24-hour of Le Mans, which is no small feat, no small matter. It's a grueling race, weather, wind, other drivers, sleep deprivation, all this kind of stuff. It's really a testament of a driver's endurance, which is why it's such a big deal. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because Ferrari ends up winning the 24-hour of Le Mans, and they end up winning the Monaco Grand Prix last weekend. They are the first team to do this since 1934. This is what's called part of the Triple Crown. Monaco, Grand Prix, and the Indy 500. You can win it as a driver. You can also win it as a team. In this case, Ferrari seems to be going after it as more of a team concept and a team idea opposed to just the drivers. But congratulations to Ferrari. This is a huge, 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 huge boost for not only the drivers, but for the team itself, for the manufacturing side. With the success of the Monaco Grand Prix and the success that Ferrari has recently had in Formula One, it's brought in a lot more attention to the other teams that they have, the other racing branches, let's call it. The 24-hour of Le Mans seems to be the one that's getting the most reaction, which, I mean, it's never a bad thing. When a team ends up winning two major races, essentially back-to-back, and since the first time in 1934, I mean, congratulations to everybody. Massive, massive achievement. Everybody needs to be very, very proud. They need to take this momentum factory-wise into Barcelona and then into Austria and then into the rest of the F1 season. I think it's really going to give that morale boost. At the same time, they do have a massive crossover when it comes to aerodynamic development between the supercars and the F1 teams that are associated with it. So whatever Ferrari learns from F1, they apply as much they can to the supercar team for the 24-hour of Le Mans, and then vice versa. What they learn from the endurance of that car in the 24-hour, they will apply as best they can to the Formula One car throughout the season. So again, massive, massive congratulations to the 24-hour of Le Mans Ferrari team. Congratulations to Ferrari in general. Let's keep up that pace into the rest of the F1 season. And folks, that is it for the hot topics. A little bit of a slow week this week. Like I had mentioned earlier before, we're heading into a triple header. We are now officially starting the European tour of the Formula One season. The races are coming fast. They're coming thick. It's going to be a fantastic season. Let's get right into it. Let's get into qualifying in Barcelona. Barcelona has a tendency to have either really good weather or, like, I don't want to call it tricky weather, but more consequential weather. Either it's really windy, it's really rainy, a little bit of both. Well, the wind had picked up in qualifying this weekend. Not really something these guys really have to worry about, except for around corners 7 and 8. That is the corners that the wind has a tendency to mess the cars up the most. It used to be a left to right track. Now it's a little bit straightened out, a little bit more. It's just something a little extra these drivers have to watch out for. Track wear is ridiculously high. And by track wear, what I mean is normally when you have, you know, let's pick Monaco. Because it's a public track or public road they race on, they have a lot more maintenance on the road. So the degradation on the tires is a lot lower. You don't go through tires nearly as fast. Barcelona, on the other hand, this is a strictly racing track 100%. The tarmac itself is a lot more aggressive, so therefore you're going to go through tires a lot faster. For example, a normal soft tire that you're going to be able to get 25 to maybe 32 laps on, here in Barcelona, the lifespan is anywhere between 16 and 21 laps. So it drastically changes your strategy that you have during this race. Now, this is typically not a one-stop race in Barcelona. It's been known to have up to 3 or 4 stops in one race. Now, keeping that in mind, all of a sudden the strategy is, do you go super hard in qualifying to get that high time and just stick with it, but you're blowing through more tires, or do you be a, or will you be a little more conscientious and maybe you don't go for pole, maybe you go for second or third, you have a couple extra set of tires for the race itself, giving you more traction, giving you more availability to win and to pass as you need. This is the strategy for this weekend. Qualifying, there's you know, it's kind of the same thing. Because do you go all out and maybe not have enough tires to get through Q3? Or do you hang back and just kind of, you know where the bar is, you know where they're going to get, start kicking people out and start eliminating people. So are you just above that? Well, some teams went for whole hog and they went big early for all three. And some teams just kind of hung on as best they could just to see how far they could get. So let's go through the bottom five and then we're going to work our way up from there and explain how we got to where we are. Starting from 20th to 16th, Logan Sargeant, 19th, Alex Albon, 18th, Daniel Ricciardo, 17th, Yuki Tsunoda, and 16th, Kevin Magnussen. Huge exclamation mark. Again, not a fantastic or good weekend whatsoever. Logan Sargeant, not only does he finish 20th, but he has a brand new floor attached to his car. He's finally getting some of the upgraded pieces that they've been working on with Alex Albon. Not only does he do absolutely literally nothing with this upgrade, he also ends up impeding, I believe it's Fernando Alonso, bad enough that he gets a 3-place grid penalty for the actual race itself. Doesn't really matter. He's not doing anything with this car anyways. I see it just as a waste of parts at this point. Why give Logan Sargeant any upgraded parts on his car, period, if he can't even get out of Q1? And not only that, he can't even get out of last place. What is he doing there? Is Williams strapped for a driver? Are they totally strapped cash-wise? Do they not have any money to bring anybody else in? Like, he's literally a seat warmer. Fuck, bring in Nikita Mazepin from a couple of years ago. At least he was entertaining. At least he shook the grid up. At least he was able to make it out of Q3 every once in a while and actually bring points to the team. Logan Sargeant is absolutely useless. On top of that, it sounds like he might be going to Prima in IndyCar for the 2025 season. In which case, if he is going, if he is this slow, why the fuck is he still driving an F1? Why is Williams taking away the opportunity for some rookie driver to learn? Maybe they don't make it for 25, but at least it gives them a learning opportunity. And they can't be any worse than the driver they have now. Why is Logan Sargeant still in? He didn't even push the car. He didn't even run through the tires. He didn't do anything exciting. He was there. Like, he, at this point, he's literally a seat warmer. He should be up there at least battling for 16th and 17th spot. They've got the car. Williams has a very reliable car. They've got points this season. They're not dead last in the Constructors' Championships. Granted, they're not as fast as everybody else, but that's just the evolutionary swing that they're on right now. But at least Alex Albon is giving it a shot. Okay, he didn't have the greatest qualifying either. He qualified 19th, not his best showing, but at least when it comes to race day, he shows up, he tries. Logan Sargeant is just like, oh, another bad day, guys. Oh, I tried my best. Just get the fuck out of the seat. Give it to a rookie that actually deserves it. Speaking of drivers that deserve a higher spot than they did, Yuki Tsunoda, Daniel Ricciardo, 17th and 18th. It's just, they're not feeling the car. You can see them trying to bring this car to the next level to make it into Q2. This track definitely shows it was not their weekend. All those new upgrades they got don't seem to be doing them a load of jack any good at all. And they're doing it. It's a bunch of jack shit. The car looks good. It looks fast on paper. In simulator, it is fast. But in real life, it's missing something. I have a feeling that VCarb is one or maybe two little tweaks. They're not massive upgrades, but one or two little tweaks away from actually making into Q2 more consistently. And then in the race, actually battling for, even at the lower end of the points, maybe even from fifth. Just, they're so close. But Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki Tsunoda, not a really good qualifying day either. But I mean, it's not really surprising who's in the bottom five. So moving on to Q2, weather stayed super consistent. Still a little bit windy around the corners. Nothing spectacular about qualifying two. Everybody was fast that needed to be fast. Some guys were just so on the bubble. Some guys were ridiculously close to making it into Q3, as they have been several times this season. They just can't quite push back that barrier. They're hitting that wall and they just can't quite make it. Notably, hometown race, Fernando Alonso ends up out in Q2 and 11th. He gets beaten out by 0.019 of a second. He gets, and I mean, and unfortunately, it was one of those weekends where Fernando Alonso and the Aston Martin team are getting beaten out by, you know, Alpine. You really shouldn't be losing to Alpine at this point. Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly, I mean, they're good drivers. They don't get along at all, but they have that luck by them. Aston Martin on paper and Aston Martin on track and simulator are a much, much, much better team than Alpine. It was just not Aston Martin's weekend. Fernando got as much out of that car as he possibly could, just missing out of Q2. Let's go through the bottom five from 11th to 15th. Fernando Alonso, 11th. Valtteri Bottas in 12th. Nico Hülkenberg in 13th. Lance Stroll in 14th. And Zhou Guanyu in 15th. It's a battle between 11th and 15th with the exact same teams. They don't seem to be getting any better, but at the same time, they don't seem to be getting any worse. Valtteri Bottas, one of his better qualifyings this year. Again, still out in Q2, but 12th, but he's showing the promise that this car could have. He does not have a seat for next year. Zhou Guanyu has been signed to Kick for an extra 2 years. It's a 2+1 deal. Valtteri Bottas has absolutely no seat at all for the 2025 season. And it doesn't really seem like he's pushing that hard to get a seat for the 2024 or 2025 season, I should say. It's kind of like it's his farewell tour without being a farewell tour, unless he really turns it up in the second half of the season or he drops his price significantly where anybody would want to pick him up just from his experience. He did want a challenge when he went from Mercedes to Sauber, and which is now Kick. He's definitely getting that challenge now. Now, is he living up to that challenge? Is he still enjoying this challenge? I would think that he is, but I don't think he's getting the results that he was hoping for. I think it's a little tougher than he had thought, but out qualifies Zhou Guanyu. They're pretty even when it comes to their qualifying versus, which means it's a very even team. It's a very well-rounded team, looking a little bit better this weekend than they do normally. But again, this is just qualifying. We still have to see what they do on race day. Now we're heading into Q3. Now we're heading into the boys who know how to go fast. And not surprisingly, because I had mentioned this before, due to the high degradation for qualifying on this track, most of these guys are running used tires. Now, what happens in qualifying is if you end up using all your fresh tires, let's say your soft tires, you use all of your allocation for the weekend and you have nothing but used soft tires, that's what you have to use in the race. So a lot of these teams were, some of them were doing, trying to do qualifying stints on mediums, trying to spread out that wear and tear so they have some fresh tires left over for the weekend. And this strategy seemed to work out very, very well for the majority of the teams. One driver in particular, it was not exactly the best. I don't know. He does better on soft tires than he does, or new tires than he does old tires. Oscar Piastri. At one point, he was up in the top five just because of his speed, the way he drives. Unfortunately, and I think it's coming down to the used tires, he had a ton of track violations. He had time deletions due to track violations in qualifying 1, 2, and 3. At one point, Oscar Piastri had absolutely no time on the board. Unfortunately, that's where his qualifying ends. Again, I myself am blaming the strategy that they used for qualifying. Now, it's not a bad strategy. It left them with some brand new tires for the race, but he didn't exactly qualify in the best position that he needed to. He qualified in 10th because of his track time violations, because the tires just kind of got away from him. Don't have the grip, don't have the stability, and therefore you change the way you drive when you don't really trust the car. You don't really trust the driver, or not the driver, you don't trust the tires. You're going to drive a little bit more cautiously, or in Piastri's situation this time, I should say, he tried to push the car to make up for the fact that they were used, trying to get through that graining session. It helped in some areas, but it was more of a hindrance than a help. Like I said, he qualifies in Q10. Everybody that came out to play, they came out to play super, super fast. Yeah, you don't always hope for a super close qualifying. You hope it happens every once in a while just because you know it's few and far between. But the way that McLaren has been upgrading their car and the way that Lando Norris has been driving, we are starting to get ridiculously close qualifying last laps than we're used to. It's like we're being spoiled. Qualifying is not usually this close, but we love it when it is. We love it when it is this much as well. Lando Norris ends up taking pole. It was a fantastic, fantastic lap from him. Dethroning, that's right, Max Verstappen ends up second. The king has officially been dethroned. He's no longer the king of qualifying. And Lando Norris ends up getting pole by 0.02 of a second, 0.02 of a second, which is still super close in Formula One, but it's still setting a statement going, hey, I'm fast around one lap. We're getting even better, especially around a high degradation track like this. Red Bull, got to watch out. And the situation for Q3, the wind had died down. It was nice and sunny. It was kind of like, you know, the weather gods and the F1 gods were getting together and they're going to wait for Q3 before they calmed everything down, especially wind-wise. It was an amazing qualifying, as it always is in Q10. Less cars, no traffic, no impeding. These guys just going literally as fast as they possibly can. And on a track like this and the time that it takes to get around for a lap, there was a lot less downtime of the drivers just sitting in their pit lanes waiting for the opportunity to go out. There was, you get in, you look at how you did, they look at the tires, they maybe do a small tweak here or there, then off you go. It was fantastic to watch. Kept you on your seat from the beginning to the end. Let's go through your top 10 right now, starting from first, ending in 10th. First, Lando Norris on pole position. Max Verstappen in second, George Russell third, Lewis Hamilton in fourth, Leclerc in fifth, Sainz in sixth, Gasly in seventh, Perez in eighth, Esteban Ocon in ninth, and then Oscar Piastri in 10th. Notable Alpines in the top 10 for, you know, probably the first time this year they're looking actually consistent when it comes to qualifying. Everything just kind of came together. They didn't get in each other's way. There was no drama, which is really nice to see for them, for instance. For once in a while, finally. Hopefully this is the turning point in their season where they can start to get along. They can see where they're gaining time and losing time in the car, and they can be more consistently a top 10 qualifier and hopefully a top 10 finisher. And again, here's hoping. You guys need it like 100%. There's a bunch of rumors that Alpine's going to be sold, that maybe Andretti's in the market to buy Alpine and just do it that way. You know, if anybody buys Alpine, they're just going to fire everybody, get rid of the drivers, and just start from scratch. So at this point, these guys really need to show up and show that they know what they need to do to keep their jobs this season. Russell, Hamilton, Mercedes in general, looking really strong, looking really consistent, coming off an okay at best weekend in Canada and previous races. They look like they're starting to come together, maybe a little bit slower than they had anticipated, especially due to the aerodynamic upgrades to the car. But the drivers are feeling more comfortable. It looks like Lewis Hamilton all of a sudden cares about driving again, that he's not ragging on the car nearly as much. I mean, maybe they had a backdoor conversation, or behind closed doors conversation, I should say, with between Toto or maybe Fred Vester from Ferrari, is going like, hey, we brought you in to Ferrari next season for a reason. Like, start acting like the legend that you are. He has a tendency to bring the best out of his drivers and just personnel in general. So George Russell's on the uptick, definitely. Lewis Hamilton, he knows who his replacement is. He knows where he's going next year, but he's starting to click. We're in race 10 of 24. We've got 14 races left to go, a bunch of triple headers, a bunch of back-to-backs. It's time to, you know, bear down, get it done, and show people why you are Lewis Hamilton and why your name should still hold weight in the sport. And with that being said, that wraps up qualifying for the Barcelona Grand Prix, for the Spanish Grand Prix. Let's get into the whole reason why you're listening. Let's get into race day. The Spanish Grand Prix, we're talking 14 turns. We're talking a distance of 4.65 kilometers, 66 laps, top speed of 346.4 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap done by the three-time world champion Max Verstappen in 2023 of a 116.3. I absolutely love this track. I hope you guys do too. Because of the high degradation on this track, these guys have a little bit more grip and a little bit more speed in some places, in some corners that they're used to. Some teams have a definitely take advantage of this. Some teams kind of struggle just to keep up. Some drivers that are unable to keep up. Unfortunately, Alex Albon, he is a pit lane start. He got new power unit parts, nothing to do with the track itself, just a little bit of wear and tear on the car. Speaking of which, Max Verstappen, he is on his last clutch of the season before he starts getting grid penalties for replacing them. We're only round 10. Actually, he got it replaced in round 9. Is this going to affect the way Max drives? He still wants to win his fourth championship. It's definitely not a slam dunk like it was last season. He's having to try a lot harder. Will this take its toll on the car more than it usually does? Will they need to replace more parts? Will he be dropping down the grid because he needs to replace things? Or, and he's absolutely allowed to do this, will he go back to his used parts for a little bit more, call it reliability? More bad news coming from the grid. Remember how I said Checo Perez qualified 8th? Again, not super strong for Red Bull. He needs to pull it up a lot more. He needs to bring in more points than he is. Well, he gets hit with a 3-place grid penalty because of his drive back to the pit lane under his own steam kind of bullshit call from the last Grand Prix. He got hit with a 3-place grid penalty, which would take place the next race, which is this one. So now all of a sudden, Perez is starting in 11th. Now, the way that Perez is driving, do you honestly think he's going to be able to come back like he was last year or the year before and actually have some solid points and actually help his team or even help Max in the race? In my opinion, in this humble podcaster's F1 fan and Red Bull fan opinion, no. He's got his new contract. He can breathe easy now, but he's not performing. And I don't see him performing very, very well from the 11th grid spot up into not even the top 5. I just don't see him doing that very well. His strategy when it comes to racing is vastly, vastly different than Max Verstappen. Not that Max has superior strategies on his team. It just seems like Max's team has things a little bit more, I don't know, put together. Makes sense just a little bit more. This is, and I'm calling this now, this is going to be a 3-stop race just because of the high degradation to the tires. Can Checo Perez, can the rest of the grid have a smart strategy to be able to keep up with the likes of Hamilton, Russell, Max, and Norris on this race? These guys are in the zone. They like this track. They're here to get as many points and pole positions as they possibly can. Well, there's only way to find out. Let's start the race. Now, when it comes to the start of the Spanish Grand Prix, it has a tendency to be a little more exciting than usual, and this definitely did not disappoint. And it's not because of a crash. It wasn't because of a bump and pass. It wasn't because anybody went off track. It was just the sheer speed, and drivers coming out of nowhere to take positions that, honestly, if you see a space, you go for it. You're a racing car driver. That's what you do. I'm talking about George Russell comes from third, passes both Lando Norris and Max Verstappen, what looked to be quite easily. And that was after being passed by Lewis Hamilton on the start. Didn't exactly have a super fast start, but what he did was super genius. He ends up passing Hamilton quite quickly. He gets his grip. And now what he does when he passes, picture this. Close your eyes. Picture this. If you're George Russell, you have Max Verstappen on your front right. You have Lando Norris ahead of Max Verstappen on the front left. But what they've done is they've left enough space where what we call in Canada, George Russell does a California lane change. He uses the slipstream from both cars and literally goes directly left, goes from right to left, just slipstream behind Max, slipstream behind Russell, and just passes them by the first corner. It was amazing to see. It was the speed, the confidence that George Russell had not only in himself but in the car. It was one of those starts that you definitely want to see more often than not. It's definitely a start that you want to see George Russell take more often because it pays off so well. So now what's the response? What's Lando going to do? What's Max going to do? What's Hamilton going to do? Hamilton does the smart thing. He hangs back. He doesn't want any of this kind of foo-for-all. He doesn't want any kind of this pressure at least the beginning section of the race. There are a few turns where you can pass. There is a chicane that you could potentially pass, but Hamilton's in no position to actually catch up to the front three. Not quite yet. What does Max do? Oh, we're just going to pass Norris and we're going to battle for three laps. We're going to battle between Russell and Norris and Max. And then all of a sudden, Max takes his opportunity, huge outside pass at the end of lap three, passes George Russell. He's into the lead. He's got some clear air. Now, this is where the most important part of the race comes from. You've burned through, let's call, a quarter of your tire life, if not a little bit less, already in three laps. Pirelli had stated that soft tire pit lane window is between laps 15 and 21. It's taking you three laps to get first, and now you got to try to get ahead. We all know how Max drives. We know how Lando Norris drives. They drive aggressively, but their tire life abilities is either really, really good or it's sometimes really, really, really bad. Max has a tendency to be a little bit more on the good preservation side. He understands his car very, very well. Lando Norris has this Jedi-like ability where he can push his car to the limit and still have tires left when he needs them. But on a track like this, is it really going to work out that well? And not only that, are your tires going to have enough life to get through your second and your third pit stop on the strategy that you're calling for in the time that you need it to happen? Well, again, some guys did a little bit better than others. Some guys also didn't get an opportunity to do this at all. Number one person, Kevin Magnussen, false start, 5-second penalty right off the bat. K-Mag is 2 points away from a suspended license, which means he's missing a race. Any dumb idea, bad driving, or even just an unfortunate incident where, let's say, he catches some grass on an ill-advised pass and he takes somebody out, he's being suspended. Having a false start doesn't give you any points on your license. It's a fine in 5 seconds. K-Mag's season is not exactly off to a fantastic start for him. But what he's able to show is that no matter how many penalties he picks up, no matter how many penalty points he has on his license, he's still willing to play the team game. He will do this until the end of time. He shows that he's a team player. Is he in the position to win races? Even if he wasn't in a Haas, if he was in an Alpine, if he was in an Aston Martin, a McLaren, hell, I'd even put him in a Red Bull or a Mercedes. No, he doesn't have that ability with him anymore. But he is certainly able to play the team game. It does come into play, not nearly as effective as it normally does in this race. He does help out Nico Hülkenberg get a few extra spots. He does help his team out get, you know, closer to the points. Obviously, they don't end up in the points. And I say obvious because it's a Haas and it's nice weather. So, yeah, it's a good job. Nice try kind of weekend for Haas, but not exactly one they want to remember. Now, as far as drama goes, Barcelona is not normally one to have a lot of drama just because how good the track is. The drivers love it. The weather is generally really, really nice. A little tailwind helps them go a little faster. High degradation, which means everyone's paying a little bit more attention. Can kind of make for a boring race. Drama-wise, absolutely boring as hell. There was no bump and pass. There was a few bumps. There was a ton of passing, actually. But there was no crashes. There was no wall hits. There was no, oh my God, why did he do that kind of moments. It was classic F1 racing, especially when you've got, and I keep coming back to this time and time again, it's the signature of this race, just the high tire degradation on this track. You're seeing a lot of opportunistic passes. So like I said, the soft tires have a shelf life of 15 to 21 laps. Okay. No one really pushed it past the 21 laps. They maybe made it to 23, 24, but that was just because, you know, the driver was either caught in traffic or they just, it's like, oh, I got a couple more laps. I can undercut somebody. I can overcut somebody. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't. Lap 19 though, first turn, fantastic pass. Lewis Hamilton on Carlos Sainz. Hamilton is one of those guys that can take their tires 5, 6, 7 laps further than the window. He's taking his opportunity to. Everyone's being a little more cautious. I want these tires to last. I want the strategy to not be screwed up because I either have to pit too early or have to pit too late. Lewis Hamilton, fantastic pass, showing that he is, you know, he's back to his old form, showing a point. Mercedes this weekend in general, George Russell and Lewis Hamilton, they were neck and neck, in my opinion, in this race the entire time. They're keeping up with the front teams. It was a team race against the other teams, obviously, but then it was also a battle within the team. But they kept it clean. They kept it smart. They kept it fast. It's showing the maturity of the drivers. It's showing the next step It's Hamilton teaching Russell. Okay, we can drive against, we can battle against each other, but this is how we do it, A, respectfully, and two, this is how we do it where we don't destroy the cars. We keep as many points as humanly possible. Pay attention, kid. This is how you do it. And when you've got a pit lane stop time of 22 seconds total, and that's if you're super fast, Ferrari and Mercedes and Red Bull were sub 2 seconds at one point. Red Bull was fastest of the day, 1.9 seconds. Everybody was either 2 seconds on the dot or maybe slightly above, like 2.3, 2.4. Slowest pit stop that you could absolutely afford this weekend was a 3-second pit stop, and that's you sitting there while they swap your tires out. I know 3 seconds for us is not exactly a long time, but in Formula One time, that can either win you or lose you a race big time. So really, really, really good pit stops for Mercedes especially. And I mean, they battled the entire race. They helped each other. They battled back and forth. They improved the team standings. They improved the team morale just by this type of racing. Everybody else from 10th back, a huge, huge battle for 11th through 14th. It's the mid-grid teams that they're showing who's, I don't want to call it second best, but they're showing who's the top tier of the bottom tier, if that makes sense. I'm the best of the worst kind of thing. Because even though the Constructors' Championships, you get a ton of money for the top five teams. From, call it 6th to 8th, there's a massive amount of money that's still up for grabs for the Constructors. So even though you're not getting points necessarily in the race, it's how you finish in the standings that help your team gain more money, even if you're not getting points. Of course, points are super important, but your sponsors want to see, and the FIA want to see, and the F1 wants to see, and the fans want to see just good, clean team racing. And they want to show that and prove that every team is trying. And definitely when it comes to these type of races, especially on a triple header, especially the beginning of the European Tour, the mid-grid teams are battling harder than most people really realize. Where, okay, say you know Hamilton's going to win, Max is going to win. You pay attention to the mid-grid teams. And this is one of those races where you paid attention to the teams and to the drivers that were, you know, fifth down, five down. The top five are pretty much set. They're the fast guys. You know what they're going to do. Their strategies are on point. So you pay attention to the Aston Martins. You pay attention to the Pierre Gaslys. You pay attention to the Carlos Sainz and then the Perez and the Ocons, because this is, if they're not having a wonderful race, they can still make a huge, huge impact on the team's success period. By the time we hit lap 45 and pretty much on, same as usual story, Max Verstappen's not necessarily way out front. He's about 5 seconds ahead. By the time you hit lap 55, 56, and even 60, that gap is drastically shrinking. It's no longer 5 seconds. It's more along like 4, 4.2, 4.3. It's not the fact that Lando Norris was drastically catching up to Max this time, which we all want to see him push. We all want to see him win. We want to see him get those points. But it was more it's safe driving for the tires, making sure he just brings it home for Max. By the time everything is all said and done, surprise, surprise, Max Verstappen wins. He wins by a solid 2 seconds. And the only reason why it was 2 seconds, like I said, is because he was saving the life of the tires. He didn't want an unnecessary blowout. He didn't want to work those tires any more than he absolutely needed to. So Max Verstappen wins round 10, the Barcelona Grand Prix. Was it a dominant victory? Absolutely not. Was it a straightforward tactical victory from Red Bull? Absolutely. Could Checo Perez actually have helped a lot more? Yeah, absolutely. He does gain a couple spots. He does finish in the top 10. He does get more points for Red Bull. But just kind of another struggle kind of day for Checo Perez. Nothing super exciting, nothing super, oh my God, what did you do? Or how did he do that? Or that was amazing. He just kind of, he did what he needed to do. Almost did just barely the bare minimum as he finished 9th. Takes home a couple points for Red Bull. I mean, you could ask for a lot more, but not necessarily thinking you're going to get that. On a positive spin, he finishes, I believe it was 14th or 15th. This was the Honey Badger's 250th race. Congratulations, Daniel Ricciardo. A solid day for VCarb, not anywhere near the points like they had wanted, but it was more of a research and development race. It's a perfect race to do it. You got a bunch of technical stuff. You got a bunch of straight line speeds, really good information. You know, they gathered for next week's race. I expect VCarb to do drastically better than they did this weekend. They brought out new upgrades, probably not the best timing, but you brought it out, you learn, you tweak it. You only have a week turnaround point to do this. So hopefully when they come into Austria, that they'll be a lot more, not necessarily, they're super consistent, but let's hope they get just have a little bit more speed and a little bit more oomph behind the race. Let's get into the top 10. Their victor, Max Verstappen, second, Lando Norris, third, Lewis Hamilton, fourth, George Russell, fifth and sixth, respectively. Leclerc in fifth, Sainz in sixth, Oscar Piastri's in seventh, Pierre Gasly's in eighth, Checo Perez is in ninth, and Esteban Ocon in 10th. Really, really good weekend for Alpine. They hit the top 10. They got some points. They got that confidence back that they needed. Hopefully, and I mean, the drivers stayed away from each other, which was fantastic. Granted, it was just Checo between the two, but no one tried to do a stupid overtake. No one tried to make a dumb decision. Their strategy was on point. Their pit stops a little bit on the slow side. We're talking 2.3 to 2.4 seconds. There's always room for improvement no matter what team you're at. You try to get the fastest pit stop possible. But overall, a very, very good Alpine weekend. They need to keep this momentum going into the next couple of races because they're going to be left behind sooner rather than later. Driver's standings, Max Verstappen is still in first with 219 points. Lando Norris is in second with 150. Leclerc is in third with 148. Sainz is in fourth with 116 points. Checo Perez is still in fifth with 111. Oscar Piastri is in sixth with 87 points. George Russell is in seventh with 81. Lewis Hamilton is in eighth spot with 70 points. Fernando Alonso is in ninth with 41 points. And Yuki Tsunoda is rounding out the top 10 with a whole 19 points. Constructors standings, Red Bull 330 points, Ferrari's in second with 270, McLaren's in third with 237 points, fourth is Mercedes with 151 points, then a drastic point drop in fifth is Aston Martin with 58 points, huge, huge gap from the first top four teams to the rest of the grid, sixth spot is V-Carb with 28 points, Alpine's in seventh with 8 points, Haas is in eighth with 7 points. Williams is in ninth with 2 points. And good old Kick Salba, 0 points. Zero. Nada. 10 races. 0 points. 10th spot. I expect they stay there the entire season. Story of the race, in my opinion, they were quite quiet, but they gained some very much needed points and hopefully some much needed support and confidence. My story of the race is just how well Alpine did do this weekend. Like I said, it's kind of odd to be a story of the race when you don't make the headlines for either good or bad reasons, but it was a work hard, keep your mouth shut, nose to the grindstone kind of weekend for them. No drama between the drivers. Their radio calls were clean. Their communication was great. It was a good old fashioned work hard, get points that you absolutely need done kind of weekend. Congratulations, Alpine. You are the story of the race. And folks, that is it. That is the wrap up for the Spanish Grand Prix. We are heading into a triple header. Next race is the Austrian Grand Prix, June 28th and 30th. And drum roll, please. It is a sprint weekend. That is right. Friday first practice is at 5:30 in the morning. For us in Canada, sprint qualifying is at 8:30 Friday morning. Saturday morning, the sprint race. And now, I'm going to try to be up for this. I make absolutely no promises. Sprint race, 4 a.m. local time, my time in Canada, 4 a.m. if you want to watch it live. Qualifying for the actual race is at 8 a.m. on Saturday. Obviously, you've got the post sprint race, you know, talk about shenanigans, that kind of stuff at 5 a.m. Post qualifying is at 9 a.m. as well. Sunday, pre-race, 6 a.m. Race is 7 a.m. And then the post race is 8 a.m. We are going to Max Verstappen's home race. I call it. It is the Red Bull Ring. We're in Austria. We will be lucky if we see half the race because of those pink flare or orange flares that the fans bring out. It's a fantastic race. It's up and down. Literally a lot of elevation rise on this course. The weather can be tricky. It can be very, very wet in Austria this time of year. I am very excited for the race, and I hope you guys are too. And as always, everyone here at F101, I would love to send out a massive appreciative thank you to everybody out there who listens. Fan base is growing every year. Very, very much appreciated. Without you guys, I wouldn't be able to do the hobby that I love, that, you know what, I one day would love to turn into a profession. So a massive heartfelt thank you to everybody out there. And as always, keep those tires turning and that rubber burning. Talk to you guys next time.